The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
To the Hit Back. I'm your host, Nahaja Black. It is a beautiful day here in the 242. We are getting closer to Valentine's Day, y'all. We are getting closer to Valentine's Day. This is our love week here on the show. We got a great show for you today, something that I wanted to do for a while, with the topic that we're going to be discussing today. I have a special guest. And so all of that is going to be a fun thing because we're going to be talking about adoption. And that is a topic. The adoption topic is a big one, even though it's not one that is spoken of a lot, right? We've been talking about our children for a while. We've had issues in the homes, talking about abusive situations. They're asking questions of how and why are children there in the first place. As you live long enough, you meet couples who have trouble having children. You meet couples who are missing their, they may have had one child or whatnot, and they're thinking, or maybe a single woman or a man deciding, listen, we would like to have a child. I'm getting up in age and whatnot. The conversation of adoption is one that we don't talk about, but it should be one that we discuss more, considering how many homes we have, how many children homes we have. How many, for such a small country, children that seem to go in and out of the system. And we don't know information. We don't have data. So that's something I wanted to discuss today. And I will, and the assistant director, Mistress Laureen Duvalier, will be joining us to talk to us about adoption. How do you adopt? What is the process of adoption? Some of the myths, things that people, adults, parents, prospective adoptees will have to do. Adopters will have to do, and what do you expect from the children? What type of children are being adopted? Do we have babies that can be adopted? What about 11-year-olds, 14-year-olds? What is that process like? Is there a cost? These are the questions that we have. Folks have been asking, already sending questions about how hard is it to get adopted. So I'm looking forward to this show today because I have always had questions. And I think some of us who are fortunate, maybe you have room in your life for one more. And that might be an option for us. But happy whatever day this is, Wednesday. Big news, y'all. It's Thursday. What am I talking about? It's Thursday. Big news. On Monday, special guest, independent speaker, Halston Mutrie, will be joining us on the Hit Back. I'm pretty excited about that as well. Also, we're going to have next week, so interesting, things that, the show that I plan on the show, and then they happen, right? Next week, Tuesday, I had already arranged to do a show on data protection. That's a big thing, right? Data protection. The changes that Facebook is making to WhatsApp, how does that affect us? But then nationally, data protection as a policy. Then today I see in the paper, right? Kwesi Thompson, the new Minister of Finance, talking about the impact of, well, working with ITU, I think that's it, right? Information technology, or telecommunications, something. I'm sorry. I should have had it open right now in front of me. But investing $400,000 in data protection and really cybersecurity on government infrastructure. And I thought, first thing I thought was $400,000 is pretty cheap. And what type of government infrastructure? We're talking about data policy. And that seems to be a part of it, data policies that is going to be introduced. So next week, Tuesday, we're going to have a show on data protection. What does it mean to be an individual with cyber rights, your cyber identity? So that is something I think we're not all grasping the value of it. There was a major breach again with a lot of your online data, a lot of your accounts. There's a lot of major breach, and that'll be something I discuss on Tuesday as well with professionals here, Dr. Wells, Adnan Cartwright. So we'll be joining with those professionals on the show. But today, a few things to note that I thought was interesting before I get to my guests, right? Few things to note. Sad news first. I've been saying for a few days now, I think starting from last week, my growing concern with, from what I've been getting from physicians with regard to COVID-19, questions of is the variant strain in the Bahamas as of yet, that hospitalizations have increased slightly, even though the numbers are increasing. There's jumps. One day it's 24, the other day it's 14, whatnot. And having that concern about, data collection, ask persons in the lab, our PCR test is 24 to 48 hour turnaround. The concern comes with the antigen tests that are being done privately that you can go and spend, $25, $30 for. And when you or if you get a positive result from that those antigen tests, that data does not go into the Ministry of Health. It doesn't compile with the data because what they tell you now is you got a positive here. So you need to go and get a PCR test. The PCR test is what is being uploaded into the database, put into our COVID-19 dashboard. That's the data we're getting, but not the data that is antigen by itself. So I would have to, if I was tested positive with the antigen test, I would have had to go by myself with my own volition, find the $100 and some odd, and then go and take the PCR test. Then that will be uploaded into the data. This is where the concern comes for me, is that what happens in that space between someone being positive in an antigen test and them taking the PCR test that's uploaded into our dashboard. What happens there is $100 and some odd could happen. And someone says, well, I know I have COVID. I'm not going into the PCR slot, right? I'm not going to have to take it. Why spend that money? I have it. Give me some medication, I will quarantine. The question is, we weren't able to trust the voluntary quarantine process. We weren't able to trust it. So if we weren't able to trust the voluntary quarantine process, tell me then how are we expected to believe that we're going to be doing it again? It's hard to quarantine if you're a single mom, right? It's hard to do those sort of things. So this is where it gets a little iffy. With all of that said, we now have two additional COVID-19 deaths. Two men have passed away. And ladies and gentlemen, take out the fact that it's a number. It says two. Go to the word deaths, and that we have two families that are grieving today, right? Or yesterday, whenever these deaths occur, right? And so we are now seeing an increase in deaths of COVID-19. And I am concerned because we don't know yet if we have the variant strain. Sequencing has been sent to Brazil. The question is, how long is that process supposed to take? How long is that process supposed to take? And how are we filling the gap on data between the antigen test and persons then going to take the PCR? All of this matters, ladies and gentlemen, because if you are running and playing blind, or you're playing blind because of the little data that you have, knowing that you don't have all of the data, because that can comfort you, Misinformation can comfort you. Misinformation can make you feel as if you're smart. You know, I always tell the story. You know, I thought I was sharp, you know, coming out of R.M. Bailey, going to COB. You know, I thought I was smart, man. My GPA told me I was sharp. Until I went into chemistry 135, right? And it was time to learn these things. And I realized I don't know any of these things. But I was extremely smart at the level that I was at. But I wasn't at the appropriate level to be qualified to even be in that class. I had to take the class twice. I didn't know the subject. That misinformation on me not knowing made me believe that I had arrived somewhere when the truth was I was far from the mark. That gave me a false sense of confidence. That made me believe that I could figure it out, but I totally was unaware of the concepts. I'd never seen or understood the subject matter. All of this means to me now, ladies and gentlemen, is that if we are looking at the low numbers and feeling confident, we might not even know if we're in a third wave truly, because there's missed information. And then because we don't know this, what happens is the knee-jerk reaction to shut down when things go out of control, when things are now out of our control, right? It is to shut down everything. But if we had better data, would we be able to say, listen, ladies and gentlemen, right now, what we know based on the antigen, because we have that in. Now, I'm not saying that this is what's going on, but I'm saying because we are blind in positives and negative data with the antigen test or true information, based on all that I've been told, confirmed by Dr. Dwayne Sands, as well on the show, confirmed by Dr. Williams Lockhart, as well, that this antigen data is not being compiled. This then gives us a false sense of confidence. I would hope that everything is fine. I really do pray that there is no issue. But we have two additional deaths. Not, you know, this is deaths here. We're still losing people. And I know the Prime Minister says his number one thing is the protection of life. Well, you can't really do well at protecting life if you don't have all of the data. Because if we had all the data, then you can tell everyone, listen, we are going to try our best to stay open. But for that to happen, we've noticed an uptick in cases. People, please use extreme caution when you're going out. Now we're seeing the need for keep your mask on, a social distance. We don't want to have to close businesses. We don't want to have to close the schools again. We are staying on track to get the economy back up and running. This is what we're going to do. We have installed sanitizing stations, blah, blah, blah. We have given more stricter guidelines. We've increased the resources in the contact tracing or in the COVID task force to make sure that businesses are complying without harassing businesses. This is what we're trying to do. We've noticed this. But if you don't know it, by the time you catch yourself and the PCR tests are happening, which, by the way, if people can afford the antigen test, they're not going to get the PCR test, right? So just think of that. If the only thing I can afford is the antigen, is $15, $20, $25, then I'm taking the antigen test. It's going to give me my information. I have it or I don't have it. Now, mind you, we know that at the beginning stages, the antigen test is not very good at those persons who are asymptomatic. So you could take an antigen test, be asymptomatic, and then be just a healthy carrier and just share it with everybody. So there are a lot of concerns and questions. We have to be very much so the people who are collecting all data. There is no gaps in data because our economy lives in it. Our economy demands that we stay healthy. So this is no room for mistakes, no room for dollar whining, as my husband would say, no room for lollygagging. We've lost two more people. Two more men have lost their lives due to COVID-19. We had in January, we lost an elderly lady. We've lost, I think since the end of January, I think we've lost four people. So we have to be mindful of this and that it is still a real thing. And I think that we must, it is, and that's why I'm doing it. I want us just to be cautious. I want us to be cautious because I don't believe that much of the information that we need to have, I think maybe a lot of it is false sense of security. And that's the worst thing. Again, being too loose or relaxed, not knowing what's out there because we're not given proper information because they don't have it. It's not that they're wishing to not give it to us, but because they don't have it, right? Because there's a poor collection of data that you go and hail your mommy and don't realize you got COVID. That's listen, those are the things that I'm thinking about, you know, that's how, you know, we lost a cousin, you know, child didn't know, and we lost someone. So look, let's everyone be safe on that side. So we got something else as another thought of what has been going on as well. Peter Turnquest, which is, you can't make these things up, y'all. Mr. Turnquest says he made the decision, right? So he says now to us, listen, I made the decision to not run. I'm not making this stuff up. Mr. Turnquest says that he made the decision himself to withdraw his candidacy. You said, Hajj, but what are you talking about? Y'all remember, it wasn't just me, eh? Wasn't it Mr. Turnquest on his own social media page that's saying, by now you've heard that I was asked by the leader to step down. You remember that? That happened. That happened. We didn't make this up. That happened last week. We heard what happened. He said it himself. We were like, ooh, child. Shanique Miller was breaking news on her page. Ooh, child. This was big news. We had this all weekend. Question was Dwayne gone? Dwayne Sands was so afraid of being gone. And everyone was so concerned. I think that Dwayne had to make sure he sent out like a troop in Elizabeth Estates just to make sure people knew he was still in red. You know, it was a big week. Big week. But Peter Turnquest had resigned. We thought that we knew what was going on. And that was the story of the day. Peter Turnquest has now decided, you know, I mean, not resigned. Peter Turnquest has got the boot from, you know, from Dr. Menace. And I had someone from the Free National Movement, an insider, I had a source tell me, well, I want you to know, you see what the PM is doing? Anyone who has a name, he's moving away from himself. Anyone who, when I says a name, who's had any blemish, he's trying to move all of the blemished individuals from around him to clean up the party in reference to Peter Turnquest. So today, Tribune reports, y'all, I make this up. The Tribune reports that Peter Turnquest is saying, for all of us now, no, he didn't get fired like he said. Even though Carl Colomo was confused himself, Carl Colomo says, well, it didn't come before me. So it skipped me. It skipped Carl altogether. The PM spoke to Peter Turnquest, said, Peter, listen, you gotta step down. But today, Peter Turnquest yesterday sent out a statement, right? Sent out a statement. And he has changed his tone, right? Here it is. However, we have formed a bond. This is how the statement goes. We have formed a bond, as I have said to several of you personally, we are family. What am I talking about? Serving the people of East Grand Bahama has been one of the greatest privileges of my life. The relationships we have formed have nurtured my family and I over the last 8.5 years, and I will remain forever indebted to the good and fine people of this constituency for the trust and support they have placed in me. We have formed a bond, and as I have said to several of you personally, we are family, and you can't get rid of me yet. I'm just a quick message away. However, after much consideration and thoughtful prayer with my family, this consideration and thoughtful prayer happened, I guess, after he said the PM fired him, but we digress. After much consideration and thoughtful prayer from my family, closest advisors, constituency executives, and Free National Movement party officials, I have decided to withdraw my candidacy for the next general election. This difficult decision is based solely on my commitment to bolstering and supporting the FNM as we continue the work of rebuilding our country and ensuring its growth and development for further generations. Well, what a time. This is amazing, y'all. Someone hold the presses. There is a member of parliament who was saying today, ladies and gentlemen, that he could do a better job bolstering his party, building the economy from outside than in the cabinet. That sounds like somebody who decided to become an independent. Isn't that what all the independents say? I could do more for my constituency on the outside. Boo, that sounds like somebody who got fired, right? Like, don't do it, Peter. We can't have you run. We can't have you run, Peter. So the question is, what really happened? Peter Turnquest knew he got that call. That was a little disingenuous to make this statement, oh, after much consideration. What kind of ninja is a Negro? This is black ninja stuff here. This is deep, right? Says, you know, this difficult decision is based solely on my commitment to bolstering and supporting the FNM. He wants to bolster and support the FNM, no longer in cabinet, no longer as a member of parliament, because he believes he can do it from the outside to continue the work of rebuilding our country. Did he feel as if he was not rebuilding our country? Was he not proud of the work that he did? Did he believe that the work that he did as Minister of Finance was insufficient? Is this him admitting that he was not good at his job? Because see, I could go through all of that, because it was amazing that someone in cabinet, someone as a member of parliament, would now say that he can do more for bolstering his country. The question is how? Normally, that's not like, you know, anyways, and development for further generations. The Free National Movement, with its transformative agenda, boy, some rhetoric, eh? Remains the best conduit for the advancement of our people and our democracy. And I am proud of the work we have done in this term. Now, that sounds like to me, ladies and gentlemen, a statement where you are trying to confirm, you are trying to persuade everyone that you are not going to be an independent like House and Mutri. You are not disgruntled, that you are a party man. That's what it sounds like to me. A deep statement to just corral the troops and unify the base. I ain't going nowhere. Sounds like something someone needed to happen. Very interesting that it took a few days for the statement to come out, after initially Mr. Turnquest said himself that the Prime Minister asked for him to withdraw, right? So, you know, the Tribune starts. This is done by Krishna Russell. Just days after Peter Turnquest announced he had been told by Prime Minister Hubert Minnis he would not receive a nomination to contest the next general election, the FNM's deputy leader claimed last night he had, in truth, made the difficult decision to withdraw his candidacy. And if you believe this, he had in truth made the difficult decision to withdraw his candidacy. That means that he admits to being dishonest when he blamed it on the PM. Oh, blame it on the water. Blame it on the water. Oh, he trolled a minister. Oh, I don't know how you do this. This is powerful. This is powerful. So now Mr. Turnquest is saying, hey, I didn't. In truth, it was me. I may have called the man's name. I didn't. I may have called Dr. Minister. I might have said that, you know, he was the one that called me and told me that he wasn't going to renominate me. But in truth, days later, it was me. You know, and he pulled the shaggy. You saw me creeping on Donna. It wasn't me. No, that wasn't a shaggy. Shaggy said it wasn't me. He said it's him. Very fascinating stuff. So now this is politics, in my opinion. He says, as the party, we have had many challenges. And this is going back again to really, to me, really reaffirming and informing the basis, no division. A letter that seems like it was asked to be written. Listen, come, don't worry about it. You know, let's just work together. You won't get the nomination, but let's work together. The Free National Movement, with its transformative agenda, he said, as a party, we have made many challenges, had many challenges, but also many successes. We must now prepare ourselves for the battles ahead. We cannot afford to lose ground in this critical and sensitive time in our development history. Now, mind you, the Prime Minister went to Grand Bahama. Mind you, the Prime Minister, this would happen, if you remember correctly, in the Tribune also, there was a discussion, and there was an article, Mr. Culmer. Sources said to the Tribune that the Prime Minister is overstepping his bounds and handpicking candidates, going against incumbents who party members wanted. This, ladies and gentlemen, I believe, as we've seen the factions, this source from the Free National Movement Party was declaring that there is infighting. The Prime Minister yesterday and today was in Grand Bahama trying to fix things. One of the things that needed to be fixed was a letter. This is all politics, ladies and gentlemen, and they are really trying to insult our good, precious intelligence, but such is life. My good producer, Solo, my good friend, did a song. This is all it is politics. Solo did a song. And with this song, you know, let's take that to break for us. Solo gonna take us to break. And Solo said he fired Peter. Peter said he ain't get fired. Well, let's see how that works. You're listening to The Hit Back with Nahaja Black. When we come back, let's talk a bit about adoption. We'll be back right after this.
Lordy, fire Peter.
Fire Peter.
appear, they say he can't run again. If I appear, they say he can't run again. If I appear, Lord, now. If I appear, they say he can't run again. Sky Bahamas, 28 million situation. If I appear, they say he can't run again. If I appear,
that one name over.
Peter was about the campaign straight through. Dress up in a jacket and he dress up in a tie. The PM say no, 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 bye, bye. He fire Peter.
One and done.
Another one he get better fire again. Another one he get better fire again. PM say with y'all, he can. When he say sit down, Peter.
Sit right here. Peter, the $28 million eater. PM say, sit this one out. Ah, boy. Georgie Bundle, all pack up. PM gets up and up his sleeve. Yeah, you watch him.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, quality.
This traffic report brought to you by Shield Insurance.
Good afternoon. We're watching the early afternoon activity in the streets, and the overall traffic is having a moderate flow out there. Lots of activity moving back and forth from the inner city area. Wolf Road, same look, can be seen in both directions. Along Mackey Street, active movement is along Marathon Road as well. Fitzgerald Drive is a bit freer, but several spots along the route there, especially in the westbound lane, where traffic is caught up in minor slowdowns. There are minor congestions that can be seen in several stop signs and traffic lights across the island. The entrance to Michael Road is a bit busy getting through the traffic light on Blue Hill Road, but Michael Road itself is still an easy ride with minimum congestions going on. You run into the traffic once you pass Faith Avenue heading in the southwest direction, but that's just your regular minimum Carmichael Road traffic flow. The roundabout at Tamalabala Highway on the exit of Tonicsville and Darling, it's busy on all sides, but there are no lengthy congestion lines tied to those entrances for traffic that's merging in from those connecting lanes. West Bay Street, still an easy and moderate ride in. Very light moving through downtown. There's a slight traffic buildup at the foot of the Paradise Island Bridge, probably because of the traffic light, but the remainder of the ride along East Bay, well, it still has to free. This is National Traffic Report, a service of Dr. Danny Johnson and Associates at Foot and Ankle International, offering the simplest and safest treatment for painful flat feet, bunions, hammer toes, sports medicine, and more. Visit Foot and Ankle International for relief. They're located Dean's Lane atop the hill at Fort Charlotte. Call them at 322-5402. That's 322-5402 for more info. With your ride, it's kind of look at traffic in real time at VA-NN.
It's happening, and it's all straight talk with no chaser. As Stephen Miller is unleashed on your radio each weekday, 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., right here on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. It's going to be smart talk, ideas, and innovation. Each weekday, 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., only on Guardian Radio, your station for fresh news and smart talk. Trust me, you're not going to want to miss this.
With the outbreak of COVID-19, we find ourselves having to be more self-sufficient, socially aware, and technically savvy. At J.S. Johnson, we remain committed to our customers during this global pandemic. Our Nassau and Freeport branches are open to assist you remotely, Monday to Friday, between 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Call 397-2100 or email info@jsjohnson.com. Be safe, Bahamas. J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers, giving you peace of mind.
Feel like a sweet treat? Have a snack pack pudding or gel. A convenient, delicious, ready-to-eat snack for the whole family. Snack Pack is full of great taste and no preservatives. Need a pick-me-up? Treat yourself to a mug of Swiss Miss hot chocolate. Enjoy wonderful chocolate goodness by just adding hot water. Your whole family can enjoy Swiss Miss hot chocolate any time of the day. Distributed by the Delbinus Agency Limited.
The Water and Sewage Corporation advises customers across New Providence, including North, Central, Eastern, and Southern New Providence, that due to an emergency leak repair at the Hydro Tower scheduled to commence at 12:45 p.m. today, customers may experience no water for a one-hour duration. The corporation apologizes for any inconvenience caused.
Cancer is smart. It pushes us. We push back. Challenging conventional thinking. Finding smarter solutions. That's what makes Cancer Treatment Centers of America one of the leaders in precision cancer treatment, using tools like advanced genomic testing and immunotherapy to bring more options to our patients. Cancer Treatment Centers of America, we're not just fighting cancer anymore, we're outsmarting it. Visit cancercenter.com/outsmart to learn more.
man. Got to get back. I need some get back. Payback. Payback. That is. Payback. Again. I'm mad. You get down with my girlfriend. That ain't right.
With your car, Easy Car Sales invites you to fall in love with an electric vehicle. Ditch the gas pump, the expensive mechanics, feel the freedom, the power. Visit easy242.com and make a date to test drive an electric vehicle today. Get into a better relationship. Find your perfect match at Easy Car Sales and drive electric happily ever after.
With the outbreak of COVID-19, we find ourselves having to be more self-sufficient, socially aware, and technically savvy. At J.S. Johnson, we remain committed to our customers during this global pandemic. Our Nassau and Freeport branches are open to assist you remotely, Monday to Friday, between 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Call 397-2100 or email info@jsjohnson.com. Be safe, Bahamas. J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers, giving you peace of mind.
Proper hand washing is extremely important as we continue to fight the spread of COVID-19. We touch many surfaces throughout the day. It is important to be mindful of where we place our hands as we may be touching contaminated surfaces and making ourselves sick. This is why you are encouraged to not touch your face. You must wash your hands often throughout the day to prevent infecting yourself or someone else. Always wash your hands before eating and after using the restroom. Wash your hands before and after you care for a sick person. Remember to wash for 20 seconds each time with soap and water, scrubbing your hands together and covering all surfaces of the hand. This simple step can save your life. Let us protect ourselves and each other.
This message brought to you by Bahamas Ministry of Health, in conjunction with Guardian Radio.
Hey! Got to pay back! Revenge!
We're back. You're listening to The Hit Back with Nahaja Black. So we're having just a slight technical difficulty. My guest will be calling in studio for our segment right now because we're having some technical issues online. But we are talking about adoption. And so we're going to have Miss Lorraine Duvalier, Assistant Director of the Ministry of Social Services, to give us a call. And Kermit, my producer, let me know when she's on so that we can get started there. So today we're talking about adoption, and it's a big topic. For me personally, it's a big topic. I think me personally, not that I've been adopted or I know anyone who has adopted, but actually I do know some people who've adopted. But because I've spoken to people who want to adopt, and so it has become sort of that conversation, right? And someone says, Nahaja, can you please give Solo an icon award? All right. And we got other text on this as well. So it's going to be very interesting. I'm very excited about the content that we're going to be having on the show today. It's amazing when you want to do something and then you end up with some technical challenges. But we are going to be definitely getting, you know, that show underway. As we wait for her to call in, good afternoon, Ms. Black. Maybe if the PLP had gotten rid of the rotten apples, it would be better off. And Bahamians, always speculating and so disrespectful. It is not assuming or funny the way people talk about others. Someday the shoe will be on the other foot. All right. Said we are in deep trouble. The country is past dead broke. The government has said it is against oil drilling. Now that there is no oil for the first well. Okay. Totally off kilter there. All right. So we're going to get that sorted out for you. And like I said, it's very, you know, it's a big disappointment that I haven't been able to get Mr. Valier on the line yet. And Kermit, just let me know if she's called so that we can move forward with that. But adoption is a big conversation for us. And that's why I'm excited to have this show. There are some concerns when people talk about adoption. One of the major concerns that people talk about is that there is a cost, right? So, all right, fantastic. And she's on the show now. Mr. Valier, welcome to the Hit Back.
I can't get on to the stream yard, and so I'm on the phone.
But we're going to fix that. Don't worry about that. We're going to get that sorted out by the next break. We'll figure out exactly what went wrong there.
I don't know, but I sent you the picture of what it's showing.
All right. Thank you so much. All right. So we are, first of all, thank you again for joining us on the show, and we will hopefully be able to get this done with you on video as soon as possible. So don't even worry about it. We'll get it done. We have the assistant director, Mrs. Lorraine Duvalier, joining us on the Hit Back. And we're talking about adoption. I've used the term foster care, Mr. Valier. So I want you to tell me if that's an actual thing here.
Yeah.
And so let me ask you that. Is foster care an actual thing here, or is that not in our vernacular? Just something we see on TV?
Yes, foster care is something that's happening. The program, though, is very inactive because we have persons who aren't willing to foster strangers, but they will foster their relatives, the niece, the nephew. Mm. If it's a stranger, it will be someone they grew up with, somebody they knew for a long time, but to approach the department and to say, well, you know, I would want to foster a child from the department. That program is very, very inactive, and it hasn't been for a very, very long time. So foster care is something that needs to be revived right now.
That's okay. So then what you're saying is that folks don't necessarily want to bring in a child they don't know into their homes. That's really what it is.
Yes, that is really what it is.
And is it because we don't just like in the States, foster care, foster parents would get some sort of stipend? Was that something that was a part of the process as well?
No, now we have that because we offer foster care allowance. It's mm-hmm. not as much as it is in the United States, but we do offer foster care allowance. And those families make up the largest number of foster homes that we have. So we have quite a number of persons who are on foster care allowance, and those are the foster homes, but they're usually their own kin who they foster, and they do get assistance on their behalf.
All right, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Hit Back with Nahaja Black. We have Assistant Director, Mrs. Lorraine Duvalier, joining us as we talk about adoption and foster care here in the Bahamas. What people want to know, how this process works here in the country. So, Mr. Valier, let's start at the top of it. First of all, how many children would you say right now are within our government-led homes, government-owned or ran homes, and then in the quasi-government homes?
Okay. Now, I didn't separate them according to how many in total, but I have the individual numbers. Who is where. We have three government homes. We have the Elizabeth Estates Children's Home, and we have 23 persons there. We have the Billney Lane Children's Home. We have three persons there. And then we also have the Nazareth Center, and there are 31 mm-hmm. persons there. And then the other homes, Ranfurly Home for Children, Colby House, Old Bike Mission Home and Bahamas Children's Emergency Hospital. Those are the private ones. The Ranfurly has 24 children. Colby House has 8. Old Bike Mission Home and Old Bike Cat Island, they have 9. And the hostel has 25. We also have Grand Bahama Children's Home, which has 29. And so we have a little over 150 children in care altogether.
Wow. And the ranges, what would you say the average, the median range is?
We take children from 0 to 18, but depending on the circumstances, the children can age out of the system, and they may not have somewhere else to go. They may not have relatives. They may be a special needs individual, and their ages would of course, be older. But we know that mentally they are not there at the age that they are. And the homes, thankfully to them, they don't throw them out, and so they continue to provide a home for them. But right now, the youngest one in care is 2 years old.
Right now, the youngest
right
one we
now,
have is
yes,
2 years old.
2 years old.
We just recently, and this is one of those questions that I always had, recently, maybe about less than a year ago, maybe 6 months or so ago, we had an issue or situation where a baby was found abandoned in a building.
Yeah.
And I wondered what would happen or become of that child, and what, or do you know what happened with the child? Because, of course, you said now that the youngest we have is a two-year-old. So I gather that the child found a home, or we found the parents. But can you tell us what happened there?
Yeah, what will eventually happen to that child? The first thing that we try to do is we try to find out who this child belongs to. So then you know that the police would be involved. And so we work closely with them to find out whether, you know, wherever the child was found, when we asked them to do an investigation, as a matter of fact, in this case, it was a police case at first. And so they would take the lead in that. They would go into the area, find out from persons who live nearby to where the child was found, if they had seen anything, same usual police investigation. Meanwhile, the child is in our care. And when I say in our care, the child is either placed in a place of safety, or the child remains in hospital, but our main thing is to try to find who this child belongs to. Now, surprisingly, in some instances, the parents show up, or someone may call and say, well, I know who this child belonged to, and they would give us information, and as long as we have information that we can work with, then we would try to reconnect with the parent. Now, I want to do an aside right now. With regard to children who are abandoned, what we have found in the department is that parents who abandon, or a mother who abandons her child, it's usually not her first child. And contrary to what people think, it's not a teenager. Usually,
wow.
It's not a teenager, no. You know, because I know teenagers get a bad rap, or this may be her first child, or she's afraid, and, you know, so she didn't know what
right.
to do. This is someone who has more than one child. Usually, a good age in late 20s, early 30s, has at least about 3 children. And this one, no father support, Grammy or mom has said, don't bring another child here. And so from that point of view, they have no support. And the support that they do have is saying, I'm already taking care of your other children. And those are the persons that we find abandon their children. Now, fortunately, though, in those cases, once Grammy finds out that, you know, what happened to this child? Oh, aren't you say you didn't want this? You know, don't bring no child. Go get that child. And they would come back.
Wow.
And
So
in cases like that, of course, we have to work with her. We have to help her resolve whatever issues it was that she had. And we ask that they go to parenting classes. We ask that they do counseling and all of that. And we make sure that support system is there and the child is returned. Now, in cases where children are not, you know, the parents don't return for them, in cases like that, we have to, if nobody comes forward, then we have to try to establish an identity for that child. And unfortunately, that child is a Jane Doe, or a John Doe, until they are adopted. And the process takes quite a while because, first of all, we have to wait for the police to give us an investigation and to say, well, I found the child on January the 6th. Let's say the child was found on January the 6th. That would be the date of birth. Or if the doctor says this child appeared to be about 4 days old, then we would backtrack to what 4 days were before they found the child and say, well, this child may have been born January the 4th. And then with the police report, also with us making radio announcements to say, does anybody know of any person who may have abandoned or left a child at such and such a place? Could you please contact the Department of Social Services? And if we don't get a response, then we continue to put radio announcements on for a reasonable time. And then after that, we get a medical from the doctor to say how old they think this child was. This child is in good health. And then we take those records to the registry of birth, and we get a search card. We do an affidavit, and also, of course, from the beginning, a care order placing the child in the minister's care, and then that child would be available for adoption.
Wow.
Not anything that happens.
This is a process.
We go through due process so that if anybody comes and says, you know, this child was my child, or I know this was my sister, and, you know, I've come to take over because things weren't going well with her or whatever, you know, but we try to give the parents or the maximum opportunity or relatives to come and claim that child, because family is just the most important thing in the world.
If you're just tuning in, Assistant Director of Social Services here with us, Mrs. Lorraine Duvalier, talking about really the overall process of adoption, foster care, and we definitely will dive into foster care, I think, for persons who would like to help. Hopefully we can get that system up and running. But let me ask you this, Mrs. Duvalier, with regard to children coming into the system. We talked about, you know, children who may have been abandoned at birth. What do you find is the number one or number two reasons why children end up being within government facilities or wards to the state?
Most children end up coming to us for some type of abuse. And you know that there are many types of abuses, but the highest number that we find coming to us are children who are neglected. They're not provided with the proper shelter, basic needs. You know, they aren't supervised properly. They aren't fed properly, dressed properly, sent to school. And then, of course, you know, physical abuse, you know, sexual abuse, verbal abuse, emotional abuse, for any number of reasons. But it's always some type, some underlying type of abuse that they are brought into the department of care.
And so with that, you know, that form of abuse, do we find that, or with any form of abuse, one of the things that has been asked, you know, I know recently we had an entire scandal a national uproar with regard to physical, what many deemed as physical abuse at one of the children's homes. But yeah, the question that was asked was how much, mental health support is provided for these children that are in the care of the government whilst they're there? Any form of mental health support?
Yes. And contrary to what has been circulated, the children do get a mental health care. They are taken because we realize that once, you know, a child has been abused, then that is trauma. They've been traumatized in so many ways. And so we know that in order to fix that, they have to have ongoing mental health treatment. And so that is provided for them. That's a given. As soon as a child comes into care, that's one of the first things for casework is to arrange for them to be seen on a regular basis. It's not, an ad hoc thing or occasional. It is something that happens routinely. Whenever we are given appointments to bring the children to get there, to be assisted, and to be counseled. That is something that is ongoing. That is something that is consistent for every child.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a big thing that many, as you said, and I've heard many people would say, listen, they're just not getting that sort of help.
No, that's not true.
And that's not true. You guys are saying, listen, we do provide it because, of course, and you would think that that would be the basic, eh? Knowing that they came from.
Yes, like I said, that's a part of casework, and that's just a given. That's a given. That's not an option when we deal with children who have been abused. That is a necessity. They have to. That's the only way that they can, that we can help to fix what is broken.
Yeah. With that in mind, okay, so now we know that there is, because there is going to be that need. When we start talking about adoption, and we'll do that on the other side of the break after the news, when we talk about adoption, the question of what parents anticipate or potential parents anticipate, and, you know, what sort of support any prospective adopting parent and fostering parent would need and be provided by the ministry of social services. Before we go to break, though, let me ask you this. The average age, and can you state that there be any average age that you find that children end up coming to you? We know that there are the range of issues, but are you finding that the average age of those that are in our care is between 7 and 11? Or do you guys have that data?
No. Abuse occurs at any age.
Right, but...
At any age,
but you don't have not with regard to abuse, but just out of your 100 odd children, what is the most common range by which they enter into the system?
No age. We don't have an average age. We just don't.
Yeah. And in terms of parents who have found to be wanting in that area, let's say of neglect, and which you said was the main thing, and the neglect being the main thing. Do you find that parents end up getting those children back in majority of the cases, or are they ending up with family?
Fortunately for us, you know, say what you want, but we still have a strong sense of community. And we have some parents who they just never rehabilitate and come forward for their children, but most of them do. We have stipulations that are in place for them to. We have requirements that they have to fulfill in order for the children to be returned to them. Let's say a situation where the children were removed because the parents weren't able to afford proper or decent housing, and that would be one of the conditions. But we find also that if a family is reported for neglect, it isn't just one factor. There are a whole lot of things. They usually can't afford food. They're maybe not working, or they are underemployed if they are. And so they can't provide the books that the children need, and so they lag behind. And it's like a domino effect where usually if you find one type of aspect of neglect, you would find so many others. And so it isn't just one thing that we have to work on. So let's say we took a child because of housing. Once we start our investigation, we don't just assist them with trying to ask them to improve their housing. There are other factors that need to be put in place, and that they would need the support to get to a level, an acceptable level, to be able to have their children returned to them. But certainly we realize how important it is for them to connect with family, because what we have found in the institution, that is the most important thing to those children. That means the most to them, to be reunited with family. And so that is what we try our best to do. And so many of them, we work with them, and if they have that desire to have their children returned to them, then we certainly try our best to reunite them.
And, you know, I know the questions about siblings, what happens with siblings, are they separated, how does that work? But we'll ask all of that on the other side of the break.
Sure.
We have joining us, I'm very excited to be doing this show. We're talking about adoption and foster care, our children that are, you know, within the system. for some reason, not with their family. Maybe you've been thinking of adoption, and perhaps there are some issues, something that can happen there. We'll be back after this with acting assistant director, Loretta Vallier. We'll be back after this.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas. Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Tired of banks forcing you to use technology to bank the way they want you to? Your convenience is important. So no matter what your banking needs, Commonwealth Bank's friendly staff are always available in branch for that personal one-on-one service. But when you choose technology, our online and mobile banking app offers you state-of-the-art functionality. The choice is yours. Commonwealth Bank. Bank the way you want.
It takes a village to raise a child. And it takes each and every one of us to grow the Bahamas. On the clock, we dive into the stories. We identify the issues, and we engage the people, organizations, and institutions that keep the country running. On the Clock with Aaron Green, weekdays 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. here on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM.
Feel like a sweet treat? Have a snack pack pudding or gel. A convenient, delicious, ready-to-eat snack for the whole family. Snack Pack is full of great taste and no preservatives. Need a pick-me-up? Treat yourself to a mug of Swiss Miss hot chocolate. Enjoy wonderful chocolate goodness by just adding hot water. Your whole family can enjoy Swiss Miss hot chocolate any time of the day. Distributed by the Delbinus Agency Limited.
Hello, sir. Your credit card bill is due. Hello, sir. It's time for your monthly loan payment. Tired of creditors pounding at your door? Sign up for a debt consolidation loan from Fidelity Bank and consolidate your debt into one low monthly payment. What's more, you'll also earn interest on a built-in savings account. The pandemic has curbed many freedoms, but at Fidelity, our focus is to help regain your financial freedom. Visit a branch or speak to Fidelity Bank at 356-7764. COVID safety measures in place at all branches. Fidelity, we're good for you.
Cancer is smart. It pushes us. We push back. Challenging conventional thinking, finding smarter solutions. That's what makes Cancer Treatment Centers of America one of the leaders in precision cancer treatment, using tools like advanced genomic testing and immunotherapy to bring more options to our patients. Cancer Treatment Centers of America. We're not just fighting cancer anymore. We're outsmarting it. Visit cancercenter.com/outsmart to learn more.
Imagine. That's where every advancement begins. With an idea that things can be different. Better. Now. Imagine a world where your entertainment experience was all about you. Your style. Your show. At your budget. At Rev, that's what we've imagined. To join the conversation and learn more about the future of Rev TV, visit us at rev.bs/imagine.
Don't let your children get left behind. Get them immunized. They need immunizations to protect them from some diseases, to get into school, and to apply for some jobs. Contact your nearest clinic or healthcare provider to make an immunization appointment today. Protect their health and their future. Remember, immunizations are free at all government healthcare facilities. Prevent disease. Immunize, please.
This message has been brought to you by the Ministry of Health.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
You're listening to The Hit Back with Nahaja Black. It's a beautiful day here in the 242. Okay, guys, before we get back to my wonderful guest, The assistant director, Miss Lorraine Duvalier, which we got sorted out. She's on our StreamYard, so you'll see her online as well. Don't forget, if you miss any part of the show, you can always listen to us. We replay the show, Guardian 96.9 FM, in the, I think, in the morning time. And we also are live online, and we re-air the show. You can actually listen to it anytime. Subscribe to our YouTube and Facebook channel. Subscribe to YouTube, youtube.com/C/Nahaja Black. Don't ask me. That was what YouTube gave me. And then, of course, on Facebook, facebook.com/Nahaja Black Show. Before we get to that, though, it's Valentine's week, y'all. Mr. Valia, this one was for you, you know. This was for you. I will send it to you virtually. I promise. This is my lady signature sweets. She's wonderful. She sent me all of these wonderful, like, cupcakes with this fancy stuff, wine and more red velvety goodness. Don't forget, if you have a significant other, I shouldn't say that out loud because nobody needs to know what I get them. It's a surprise. Nonetheless, there's some significant people in my life, apart from the hubby, who are getting these wonderful, she has these wonderful packages set up. You know, you can get chocolate-covered strawberries. You could get wine with the strawberries. You could get your cupcakes with a shot of whatever you want in it. Not really. She has a limited arrangement of, you know, alcoholic beverages you could shoot into your, whatever. You know, I got people who drink. I ain't never job. But she has these wonderful options here. I'm so excited. I'm on keto. So all I could do is really look at this, right? And my husband gave me the evil eye. Like, you're supposed to be on no carbs. But look at that. This is red velvet. It's huge, too. I can't even discuss that. Don't forget, give her a call. WhatsApp her, 436-8494. That's Signature Sweets. 436-8494. Get your Valentine gifts sorted out. You know, this is why... You know, this is Love Week. I've been doing extra all week. Welcoming back on the show with me, and I'm really excited that she's here, ladies and gentlemen, on the air with me, Madame Duvalier, welcome.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you on. We finally got it sorted, and it's good to see your face. You look wonderful. This red jacket, you look good, man. You're ready for love. All right.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, let's continue on this wonderful conversation that we were having, right? Really discussing adoption here in the Bahamas, really wanting to know more about what our system is about. So let's dive in. Adoption, as it stands today. Adoption, over here, it seems to be that where people are interested, but a lot of response you get is, this thing, it doesn't work. You get frustrated. That it is more red tape than not. Give us a sense, Assistant Director Duvalier, what is the process for someone interested in adopting?
Okay, someone who is interested in adopting would need to be patient. That's the first thing. You would need to be patient. First of all, you would have to come into the Department of Social Services, the placement unit, and they're located on Blue Hill Road. You know where Sunshine Plaza is, there's right to the left, there's a two-story building there upstairs. You can make your application to become an adoptive parent. Now, once you do that, your case is assigned to a caseworker, and then that caseworker makes an appointment with the couple. You also have single persons who want to adopt, single women who want to adopt if it's in the case of a father. Then the father can adopt his own child, but the father, a male, can't adopt anybody else. But if you have a couple, both of them would have to be interviewed, and the process is lengthy. We have to do a home study report. The home study report is lengthy, like I said, because we don't know you, but it's our way of getting to know you. And so we ask you a whole lot of things. We really, really delve into your background. You have a lot of persons who resent that. They do not want persons to, you know, why do I have to tell them all of that? But like I said, we don't know you. And so we try, you know, the home study is our way of trying to get to know you. And we ask you about your finances. We ask you about your background. We ask you about your views on parenting. We ask if you have adopted a child before, your reasons for wanting to do that. You may be childless. We ask you about that. We want you to be in good health to be able to take care of a child, so you have to have a real comprehensive medical. We ask you about if, you know, being able to take care of a child financially, and so we would get into your finances and all of that. So we leave no stone unturned. And so if you get through that, then also I'm not to mention about having to visit your home and to make sure that you have enough space to find out if relatives are interested, not interested, if relatives are supportive of your decision, because if they are not supportive of the decision, then, you know, that can play on the mind of the child too, if you bring a child into a place they are not wanted. And so we explore every avenue. And then after that, once your home study has been completed, we also ask for references from other persons. If you're married, we ask for your marriage certificate, we ask for your birth certificate, we ask for everything. And then your application goes to an adoption committee and they look at it. And if there are any red flags in that home study, we have persons who are on the committee and they would say, well, you know, I'm not satisfied that, you know, this seems to not be right. Can you, you know, find out some more information for us? And so once it goes through that and through the adoption committee and it's approved, then you are put on an approved adoption list. Now the list is a running list and the order of your approval and the date of your approval determines where you are on the list. And so right now we have, sorry.
No, you can finish your part there.
Yes, we have 45 persons on the list wanting to adopt children. At this moment, yes, ma'am.
All right. Okay, so then let me ask you this question here. With regard to the status, because you mentioned, a gentleman can only, a single male cannot adopt any children unless it's his own.
Yes.
Right? And that's for safety, obviously. I mean, it's kind of weird, right?
You have to be real, Nahaja. You have to be real.
It's kind of weird. You coming around here wanting to adopt a child by yourself. Okay. So, but then now, so it brings the question of your good candidates, right? What is a good candidate look like? Would, when you're looking and you guys are measuring, and you mentioned some things, right? Your finances, if you're a couple, you want to make sure that we're healthy, that the marriage is healthy, that the home has space for it. These are, you know, relevant questions. What does a good candidate look like? How much money should they be making between the two of them? Well, how do you guys judge?
No, we don't judge. Because it's not as if, well, you have to be making 80,000, you have to be making 100,000 or whatever. What we look for is what we would look for in a good family without having children to be adopted. If, you know, if you have your own children, what is an ideal standard for you is also what we look for. If you bring children into the world, you would want to have that balance with the parents. You'd want to have that family support. You would want to be able to have enough finances to be able to take care of a child. So what you are looking for in a normal situation is the same thing that we are looking for. We're not looking for anything extra.
Right. But so when you're looking at finances, you're just trying to make sure that you're not like rimming over in debt or something like that.
Yes. Able to take care of the child and the child won't suffer. Because even in your own home, you wouldn't want to bring a child when you are laden with debt or anything like that. And that would affect your ability to be able to take care of that child. In your own natural environment, you wouldn't want that. So we wouldn't want that either.
Yeah. There's a question of single men can't adopt. Isn't that discrimination?
Well, it's the law. It's the adoption. It's in there. And it hasn't been changed. And nobody has kicked up about it, and so it's there. But we can change that, you know.
Yeah, because I don't think all men are perfs, but you know, it's going to be different, you know, to see how this works out. And I would say that it would be odd in Bahamian culture.
We don't have many knocking down, you know, trying to break down our daughter coming to it either. So, yes.
What is the process in terms of timeline? What do we find the timeline normally like from the start of the application to the end of the application, to the end of a successful application?
Mm-hmm. Now, the adoption with the home study and whatnot and getting that done, It's just a matter of arranging with the caseworker and the caseworker coming to get all of that done. I'd say about 6 weeks for the best case scenario. I'll say 6 weeks. And we also have to wait until we can get the adoption committee together to look at your application. So between getting meeting the caseworker and getting the home study done, that's the easy part and that's the very fast part. But then waiting for the committee to meet, that might be take a little longer. But what it isn't that with timing so much as now once you get a child in your care and waiting to get that child adopted through the legal process, that is what will take some time.
Okay, so then there is this. You can go through the application process. Let's say after six weeks, best case scenario, that the adoption process is approved. You still have to go through the legal process. Does the child stay with you? Okay, so the child can be staying in your care then?
Yes. After you're an approved applicant and there is a child available. Now, we haven't gotten to that part yet.
No, we haven't gotten to that part yet.
If a child is available, then that child is placed and that child meets your specifications and whatnot, then it's placed in your home on a trial basis to see how you gel and all of that, particularly with older children. And we follow that up for a while to see whether or not that works, because there are some cases where it doesn't work.
I've been told I have my sister-in-law, I call her my sister. She's a social worker. She says, Nahaja, some people just like return the child. Like, that's it. We tried it out. It didn't work out. Can single women adopt? And you said yes earlier.
Single women can adopt, yes.
Is there for some of us, we might find that our clock has ticked. It's been ticking. It's going off, right? That proverbial internal biological clock. And we've hit an age. We're probably 40, 45. And we want to adopt. Is that what age is not a good age? It's not. We lose points. You know, like when you can lose points.
Well, we try to for children not to be so young that the parents can't relate, and so we encourage persons who are able to more youth on their side. We want them to have youth on their side. Somebody who's 60, definitely no. That's the cutoff age. So it depends on your age. If you're in your 50s or whatever, we try to encourage you to adopt older children. And the younger applicants, we encourage them to adopt younger children. So if somebody comes to us who's 50 or who's 60, or nearing that age and wanting to adopt a child who is 6 weeks old or 1 year old, we don't encourage that. So we are very cognizant of the age and what their ability is and their energy level and all of that. So we have to be real about it.
If you're just tuning in, we have with us Assistant Director Lorraine Navalier joining us on the show. We're talking about adoption. We're talking about foster care. This for me is a show that I always wanted to do. For a long time I've wanted to do. Always is a stretch, but for a long time, because the conversation has come up sufficiently that this desire for folks to adopt. When you're looking at, you mentioned something, Mr. Valier, you said if there are children available. At this present moment, do we have children available for adoption? And how do you determine if a child is available for adoption?
Okay, I'm glad you asked that, because persons would say, well, I mentor children at the hostel, I mentor children at Ranfurly, I mentor children at the Nazareth Center, and there are so many children, and I see Jane Doe over here, and I want to adopt her. And even we have had persons with the child that was abandoned a couple of weeks ago, they came in and they said, well, I'd like to adopt that child. Not every child who is in the home is available for adoption. And what we have found is that a lot of persons, they want to adopt young children. From 0 to 3. That is what we have found. And they want those children because they can mold them. And who doesn't want that, to be able to train the children and whatnot? Because, of course, the older they are, the more difficult it is. And so we don't have that many children available for adoption. And a lot of persons, especially the younger ones, they want babies. Mm-hmm. And like I said before, we still have a strong sense of community. Somebody is going to come along, Gordy, Auntie, somebody is coming along and saying, you're not my family. Mm-hmm. And they're going to take that child.
Yeah, and someone tuning in said, most older persons who want to adopt will prefer a younger child that they can train and mold them.
Yes, yes.
So then let's chat a bit on this a bit more. When we look at present, you say we don't have many. I think you said that the youngest that we have right now is a 2-year-old, right?
Yes.
And we are at the point where you have a lot of older kids. How much interest do you get in those older children? And is there a... Not much?
Not much. Sadly, not much.
And so you mean like a 10-year-old, 11, 12, 14-year-old? Nobody's asking.
Hardly.
Someone say to me, well, you know, Nahaja, the problem is that you get these older kids and the parents are still around, or daddy is still around. And the concern is that these parents or this family member will show up and try to create a scene. I had some folks mention that. Have you guys ever had that as a concern or heard that as a response?
Yes, we have that. And we have that often too. We have that often. They're not doing much, but they don't want the children adopted. Sometimes you have them, they're trying to help out a situation. The child may not be available for adoption, but the parent may not be in a position to be able to take care of the child. And they go around the people's place making noise and carrying on. We just had one no later than last week. She's not in a position to take care of the child. And she, now one thing that we will do, people have in their mind that social services will take your child and put your child wherever they want to put them and whatnot. No. If your child is placed with someone, we will consult with you. Is there somebody before we move children, or even while we're moving the children, we ask the relatives, are there any persons that are fit who you would want this child to be placed with? And we go along with what they say after we do our investigation. And we find that the place is...
Fresh news, smart talk.
You're listening to the Hit Back with Nahaja Black. We've got joining us today. Let me make sure I've got all of my audio sorted out. Kermit, let me know if we have any feedback and get our show on the road here. Okay, so good. There you go. I'm back online and everything. Joining us here, we've got Assistant Director Lorraine Devalier. How are you, Ms. Devalier? All is well.
I'm doing great. I'm great. So we're back on, so I can unmute.
I think that we're fine. Kermit, let me know if we're fine. Yeah, my producer says we're fine, so we're good.
great. Okay.
All right. So as we were, you know, chatting up a bit, right, with regard to the process, the adoption process. What we really wanted to get a sense of, right? And hold on one second, let me check because I got too much going on. What we have gotten to so far is that, hey, listen, we are able to really begin to touch the process, or people begin to understand the process of adoption, right? And I think that that's a big deal, that we are able to now see and know how we are able to get this done. Let me ask you this quick question here. When we're talking about the process of adoption, foster care has come up a lot. People want to know more about fostering.
Yeah.
We mentioned at the beginning of the show that the foster care program that we used to have isn't as good as it used to be, or isn't as full as it used to be.
It's bad. We have no persons coming in asking to foster.
spouses are not asking to foster. When they come into us, they are saying that I have my niece, I have my nephew, I have my godchildren, my grandchildren or whatever in my care, and I want to receive foster care allowance on their behalf. And so we call them foster children and foster homes and whatnot. But in the true sense of the word, this person saying, I don't want to adopt, I just want to foster, persons aren't doing that anymore. And
wow.
The process is the same. As a matter of fact, that process that I explained to you is the same as for fostering, except that the ones who want to adopt, they take it a step further and they legalize the relationship between them and the child.
So is there any way where you can, we can, so the process that it exists today, so is there any way you can, we can make that better, more robust? So how do you fix that?
Well, we have tried methods in the past to try to get persons to become interested in fostering. We have asked persons in the church whether or not they would be interested in that. We have appealed. We have made appeals to persons, to the community, to foster children, but we find that they are not interested in now that aspect of us as a society and as a community. It's very disappointing in that you don't have persons coming to foster. Now, what we do have, we have informal adoptions where, you know, a family might take in a child and say, this is my adopted son or whatever. And so they are actually fostering, you know. And so we do have something going on in the community, but then to approach the department about it and to ask us to foster one of the children, we don't have that happen. That's not happening.
And you think that, I mean, fostering would work really well for the older children, I guess. Would
yes.
that normally be?
Yes.
And in terms of the incentive, not incentive, but the support, what
yes.
normally is the government support for what used to be the foster system or what can be a foster system?
When you say, what is the government support?
In terms of financially, yeah.
Yes. We provide the financial support, and we are also providing, if they're having problems with adjustment of the child,
mm-hmm.
because you know that the foster children, they come from the abusive backgrounds, and mm-hmm. as a result, they need the psychological assistance and support, and we assist with that. We monitor those homes once per month. We check with the schools. We're in there. And so in terms of the support from the department, that is there.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with the adoption, after, you know, about a six-month period, after making sure that the child has adjusted and the parent has adjusted and they go through that legal process, we basically leave them alone. But the foster
mm-hmm.
fostering, we never leave you alone until that child is 18 years old.
What type of persons would be good candidates to foster?
Older person.
Older what age?
Person, 40s, 50s, we encourage them, particularly older children. The younger ones, they're going to be adopted because the adoption applicants, they want the younger ones. So the younger ones, up to 3 years old, they're going to go really quickly. And then the older ones are left there. So we encourage persons to do that now, though.
If you're just tuning in, Assistant Director Lorraine Devalier, Ministry of Social Services, joining us on the air. We are streaming live on YouTube and Facebook as well. Slight technical issue for those who are listening on Guardian 96. We kind of dropped out because of the internet issue. But, you know, so there's parts of it that we need to get back to, Mr. Devalier. Because you and I, we were chatting along, and there was a big, you know, it was a good section there. And I think my producer tried to tell me exactly where we dropped off. But if he could send me a little note. Thank you, Kermie. So, Ms. Devalier, then, okay, with regard to cost, and this is going back to people are asking the question, well, how much are lawyer fees normally? Because I think people have been hearing ranges of crazy fees to adopt. Is the legal process that intricate that we would need to pay tens of thousands of dollars to adopt?
Now, the legal side of it, in in terms of the money, we don't get into that. But what I would encourage the parents to do is to shop around for costs, because you have, of course, you would have different costs for different persons, and then you have some lawyers who specialize in various types of legal matters. And so then we, you know, shop around, and then, of course, we look for the best price, but we don't get into the cost of it. Mm. We don't get into that at all.
Someone sent a message saying, I know a lady right now who says she has inquired about fostering an older child but hasn't had success. She's a longtime volunteer to one of the children's homes and has been vetted by the ministry. I've heard stories like that before. What did you say to that?
But remember, Lahaj, we said that not everyone who is there is available for adoption. They may not see somebody coming there to them or whatever. Not all of them are available for adoption.
But this one's just the foster. So this
yes,
this,
and not the foster either, because you have some person, we can't just foster out children. You have to be in the minister's care until you are a certain age. We have to have a permanent care order on you in order for you to be available for adoption and or fostering. And that permanent care order comes about as a result of us exploring every single avenue, and none of those avenues have panned out in terms of it looking good for you to be reunited with your parents. But if there is a glimmer of hope, then we try to work on that hope, and we try to reunite that family. But not everybody is available for adoption. And not everyone is.
And I think that's interesting. I think a lot of us wouldn't, you know, we see all of those children in homes, right? We see all of those children.
Yeah.
And we're like, just in the emergency hospital itself, we're like, geez, there's a lot of children. How can I help?
Yeah. You can help by volunteering. being a mentor, but not all of them are there for adoption.
Yeah, or fostering. So then how would someone say, okay, listen, I've been blessed, I'm fortunate. I may not have all of that, you know, every week showing up to foster, but I would love to have or be able to assist with fostering. So how would someone know that there are children that are able to be fostered?
Okay. Well, we have a child care facilities unit, and they can visit that unit whenever they want to, and they can say, well, I'm interested in Jane Doe. I'm interested in fostering them, and they would let you know whether or not that person is available for fostering or adoption.
Mm-hmm. Keva asks, how can one become a mentor?
Well, you definitely would have to go. You'd have to come to us for us to do a backup on you. And when I say that, we do a report on you. You'd also have to be vetted in order to interact with children.
Any particular departments? Have we become just to the social services, or any particular department we go to?
Child protection. You can go to the child care facilities area, and that is National Insurance Building on Robinson Road, or you can go to the placement unit, which is in Sunshine Plaza, upstairs, the two-story building.
And so you just fill out an application, say you want to be a mentor.
Yes,
is there any training that happens, or?
No training. Because when you go into the home, what would you want to do other than just interact with children, or if you want to tutor or whatever? But no training.
Okay. And if you're just tuning in, sorry, finish your thought there.
Just love, I would say. Just love and be interested.
Yeah. You said right. If you're just tuning in, sorry, you have the assistant director, Mrs. Lorraine Devalier, joining us on the show. We're talking about adoption. We're talking about foster care, this process. What sort of mindset, or what do you think many people who seek to adopt, what is the normal mindset that they come in, some misconceptions that they come in with when they're thinking about adopting or fostering, that you guys have to all constantly say, listen, well, I know you're thinking this, but this is not how it is.
Okay, now I'm going to come from a place that you would think is left field, but this is what I have found. Particularly with, let's say they have a child who is an older child, if they adopt an older child, what we have found is that as far as those adopted parents are concerned, or even we found with foster parents, their thing was the misconception is this child should be perfect. This child ought to be perfect, and things that they would not and what they would put up with their own children, they will not put up with that in a foster child. And so their thing is, you know, I'm fostering you, I'm bringing you into a home, or I'm adopting you, I'm, you know, sharing my life and whatnot with you, and the least you can do is be perfect. And so whenever that child starts to act like who they are, can you come and get this child, please? And so, you know,
wow.
They come in with high expectations of these children, not realizing that they were placed in the home because of some type of abuse, and so they're going to have the baggage that the normal child wouldn't have, and so they're going to need the extra help, and but they're not prepared for that. Some of them are not prepared for that.
And I don't think that's left field at all. I think that's great sense, you know, like we have to realize that you're, if you want to, especially if you're talking about older children, that baggage hasn't even just arrived, it's baked in a bit. You know, and so it's going to be needing time. So with that in mind, obviously the ministry provides assistance.
Yeah.
Right? So let me, and I want to share the story with you that I heard. Recently there was a high-profile incident, and it involved a child and loss of a parent. And what was said to me was from someone who was now watching the child was that the child hadn't received any sort of mental health assessment from social services, and that I was able, through some connections, able to assist with getting free services for the child through some wonderful persons that I know. But that made me question, you know, okay, do we have the sufficient resources to provide? Is there in-house counseling? How does that work? Because if we're talking about something that was so high-profile and that child hasn't been able to receive the care there mentally, what about those within the system? Is it maybe because they're closer, they have the access, and those outside, no?
Well, the help is there. But the thing about it is a lot of persons might think that we are aware and, what I'm thinking that you're asking is somebody who is not in the system.
Right.
Are you saying somebody who's not
in
the system?
Not in the system.
Okay. So if they're not in the system, if they're brought to our attention, we certainly will try to help. But a lot of people just assume that you know, and so, you know, or she isn't doing anything, or the department isn't doing anything, but if you, how can I know if you don't tell me? How can I help if you don't, you know, bring it to my attention? So bring it to my attention so that I can help, and so that I can, you know, do what I can.
Mm-hmm. Right, because they were in the system for a short period of time. You guys found family that would take them in,
mm-hmm.
and that was the family saying, well, you know, we haven't heard anything from them since.
Mm-hmm.
And I think needing to know what is the proper process. But
but then reach out to us too. You know, reach out to us also.
No. Yeah. Now, last set of things before we go. We talked about the process in and of itself, the adoption process. One more time for those who are tuned in a bit late, Mrs. Duvalier. Quickly, what is that home study process like for those who just are tuned in?
Okay. The home study process is very involved and very detailed. We go into your background, we find out your parents, your siblings, school you went to, your job. We find out everything. We ask about how your siblings feel about the adoption. We find out about your work history. A red flag to Nahaja is if you keep moving from job to job and don't seem to be stable. I'll put in stuff as I remember. And so we find out what your income is. We get references to find out what type of person you are, what type of couple you are. We find out how your health is. If you had problems conceiving or whatever, how did you deal with that? How have you come to terms with your inability to have children.
Yeah.
How does your husband feel about it? You know, is he bitter? Does he want children? Does he feel the same way that you do about the adoption? You know, is he letting you do all the talking? How do you get along? And also, you have to be married for a certain length of time, too, because, you know, well, of course, you'd need some time to get used to each other and whatnot and to be comfortable in that relationship. So, you know, there is a time period that you should be married for that stability and whatnot, because you're bringing a child into a home that you want to thrive and to do well. And, you know, we find out, like I said, about your health and, you know, just a whole lot of detailed information. We go into the house, we look, you know, all around, and we make sure that there's somewhere where the child can be. We look at the type of neighborhood that you're in, all of that. So it's something that's very detailed, and if you're not prepared for that intrusion, you know, some persons just say, well, I don't want to be bothered with that.
I heard, this is a common refrain, even just today, before doing the show, I heard someone say, listen, this process is all about who you know, right? If you know the right people, you can get yourself a child instantly, and everybody else is going to take years. What do you say to Bahamians and to folks who are listening? Because I know people are listening now, and they say that that is how they feel, is that this is a sort of who you know kind of thing.
Okay, now that could be dangerous to a certain extent, because we have a lot of private arrangements going on, where someone would say, well, I know someone who wants to give their child up for adoption, and so why don't you go and hook up with them and then go and find a lawyer or whatever. In some instances, we find that illegal immigrants would leave their children with somebody, and then when it's time to adopt that child, that's untold complication.
Really?
And yes. And so what I would encourage persons to just go about situations in the right way. If you know somebody, it's not a situation. I'm thinking that when you say who you know, it isn't a situation, well, I know somebody in the placement unit. And so I'm going to go there and try to get a child. And because I know them, I'll get a child. No, that doesn't happen like that. Because you're on a list, and that's the list that you're on in the order that's there. And it isn't who you know that they will, you know, you'll get ahead of somebody. But it's who you know in terms of going with private arrangements. If you know somebody who wants to give their child up for adoption and who they don't mind you having that child, and they would go with you to the lawyer, and they would sign the consent form and whatnot. It's who you know, and that would work. It depends, too, on the type of situation that you are in. We are finding a lot of adoptions of convenience. We're finding persons who are moving to another country, and they're leaving their children with other people, and they're signing this document and that document, and then they're coming to the department to do a report for the court. That is a problem.
So we, I think we're gonna have to do a part two, Ms. Duvalier. It's amazing. Well, we gotta go.
Yes.
Thank you so much for the time, and you've been a great guest.
Thank you.
All right, you're listening to the Hit Back with Nahaja Black. Everyone, have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow with Dr. E. We're out. Bye bye.